Welcome to the intersection of theater and even more theater. You have achieved stage grok. Stage Grok, the roaming theater podcast, coming to you from the geographic center of the American Theater. I'm your host, Scott Miller. Today I'm talking with actor Anderson Matthews, who is in the original cast of the 1975 musical The Robber Bridegroom. I spoke to him while he was here in town working at the Repertory Theater of St. Louis. Well, thank you for talking to me. I want to talk about Robber Bridegroom, which is one of my favorite shows ever, ever, ever. I discovered the cast album in college, fell in love with it, and finally got to work on it myself in 2004. And the reason I'm talking to you today is that you and I talked about it back then because you had been involved in the origins of it. So first, talk about how you got into Robber, the beginnings of Robber.
Okay, well, if memory serves, now we're talking 40 years ago, if memory serves, John Houseman and Margot Harley, who were running the acting company, which toured around the country with classical plays and modern plays, had decided that they wanted to do a musical, and an original musical. And
Did they commission it?
No, they did not. Okay. They saw a workshop production at St. Clement's Church in New York, which was an old, really not even an off-Broadway house. And that show had an actress named Rhonda Coulee in it and Ernie Sabella, who had a lovely career afterwards. And Houseman said, well, I think this is what we, I think this is the show we ought to do. And so they got the rights from Bob Waldman and Alfred Urey, and they said it's perfect for the company because, the oldest member of the touring company was 30 years old, so it was, it was great. And it had the added plus, though no one knew this at the time, we did in the company, but nobody knew in the time that Patti LuPone and Kevin Kline were both members of the company.
Wow. And now, what was this? A repertory company?
A real repertory company. We took like five or six shows on the road. We were doing Love's Labor's Lost, Three Sisters, Edward II.
How awesome!
And then stuck in there was this little unknown musical called The Robber Bridegroom, based on the Eudora Welty book.
Which seems to me a perfect show for an existing ensemble.
It absolutely was. They lost somebody, and so they held auditions in New York, and I auditioned for it, the company, and was cast as a member of the company. And my role with Robber Bridegroom, because they were already in rehearsals for 2 weeks when I joined the company, I had to be a swing for a lot of the townspeople, and I understudied Big Harp, the head in the trunk, and
for people who don't know the show, the character literally is a head in a trunk.
His brother, Little Harp, carries him around in a chest, and when he needs advice or when they get in an argument, he pulls him out, and you had to do this whole head swinging thing,
So you were in the trunk.
I was, well, they would place the trunk on the ground and it had a little velour back and you crawled under it and popped your head up through this hole and then he would pull you up, your head up out of the trunk.
How
funny. And it was, you were in black from the neck down and it looked disconnected.
That's hilarious.
And as it happened, we opened the show in Saratoga, New York. And 2 days before we opened, Ben Hendrickson, who was playing the part of Big Harp, had developed vocal nodes to the point where he was having trouble speaking.
Oh.
So Margot Harley walked up to me, little me, sitting in the house, thinking to myself, thank God I'm not doing this, and said, well, Anderson, you're on. And I was like, wait, I haven't had a rehearsal. I hadn't had a rehearsal. I hadn't had anything.
Wow.
But so they immediately put me in the costume and fitted the wig and the beard and everything to me. And I knew the lines because I was a dutiful little understudy.
And how old are you at this moment?
Oh, I'm 25.
Wow.
And so that was okay. I knew the acting stuff, but I'd never had a dance rehearsal. I'd never had a singing rehearsal other than singing the songs as people were learning them. And
there was a lot of really complex staging in the
there
original,
were,
right?
There were parts where there's a song called Company's Coming, and you're singing, you know, set the table, get the benches, all of this stuff. Well, we were doing all of that, and people were throwing plates through the air. And you had to catch them, and it was all on the beat, you know,
right.
And everything was, and you had to take the benches and move them around, and there's all this whirl of flying silverware and stuff, none of which I had ever rehearsed. So people like Richard Ooms and Brooks Baldwin, who was also in the show, and people like that, I'm sure I was glassy-eyed. and we'd be singing, Company's coming, get the table, pick the plates, you know, all of this. And under their breath, they'd be going, and now we'll take the bench over here. And off we'd go into the beat, and we'd set it down. Here comes a plate, catch the plate, put it down. And
who's staging this stuff?
Gerald Friedman, who Donald Sadler was the choreographer. And, you
and
know,
Friedman had been the first director on Hair,
yeah,
right?
Yes, and yeah. he had been an assistant director on the original production of Gypsy.
Oh wow!
And he then went on to head the North Carolina School of the Arts program.
Nice.
But I loved Jerry Friedman. I thought he was great, and it was incredibly imaginatively staged. And Donald Sadler came up with all these terribly imaginative dances and. You know, that I could rehearse on my own, sort of in the back of the rehearsal hall, and it just so happened that I knew the curtain call, because that was easy to learn, and it was a cool curtain call, because you all came down in rows, and you all had individual dances in lines, and...
Wow.
And, going through all of this horror show of having to...
For the first time ever.
First time ever, having to, on the fly, have to learn to do this stuff. We rehearsed the curtain call. I knew it, and Gerald goes, oh, well, he's ready. And I'm like going, no! And, you know, we did a preview, and I got through it. And then we did another preview, and I got through it. And then we opened. And,
wow.
But it... And then...
Did you... Get comfortable?
Oh, I got completely comfortable right. after, but mostly out of flop sweat. I mean, out of total terror, you know. And everybody was incredibly supportive and helpful, and that's kind of the way it was all rehearsed too. And because a song like "Nothing's Up" that Rosamund sings. She's wandering through the woods before she meets the robber, and she and Patty would be singing this song, and she had this little blonde wig on and everything, and as she's walking, she'd step onto a plank that we would move to a barrel, so that as she crossed and started to step on another plank, we would move that plank so that she never fell, but it always happened. Just before she would
right.
step on it, and you know, and people were being trees, and that she could brush aside, and all this stuff, and you just crossed your fingers and hoped you got through it.
You know, I never made the connection before with Gerald Friedman, but it sounds like Robber is not all that distant a relative from Hair. That it is very ensemble based.
Very ensemble based, because everybody in the production, everybody in the play, is a townsperson.
Okay, now let's talk about this,
because
I think this is so cool. You told me this way back,
yeah.
And it was so valuable for our production.
Yeah.
So talk about this.
Well, rather than just a third person narrative tell the story of the robber bridegroom, they set up the concept that this was something that the town gathered every year to retell this fable, because it it meant something to them. It made them feel good.
It's like their passion play.
And it was their passion play. And we, as the townspeople, were all individuals, and Gerald Friedman, you know, encouraged us, without taking anything away from the actual storytelling, to be real, really distinct people. And
which makes a show so much richer.
Right. And I always remember that I used to come in, and because I was big harp, I had this huge black mane of black gray hair and this big beard, and I became kind of this gentle giant, you know, who would and Patty would come running over and sit between my legs with their elbows up on my legs, and we developed a relationship with ever. It told a story without taking away from anything.
Among these townspeople,
and you know, who's the best singer, who's the guy that you know, we want, oh, we can't wait to see what he does with Goat, you know.
Right.
And that kind of thing.
I think I remember you telling me that the concept was that whoever's playing Rosamund is a descendant of Rosamund?
Yeah, it's there's a special reason they had to play that part.
Like the roles get passed through the family?
Yeah, and things like that. And
that's all so cool. And when I told our actors about that, it was like I had just given them the best present ever. You know, it was just so much fun to play all that.
Well, it takes it away, you know, it doesn't just become, well, who are we? Are we a chorus?
Yeah.
No, you're not a chorus.
Right.
You're an actual individual, and you have to do your part. You know, if you're playing Raven, you have to be Raven.
Right.
and we could appreciate how well you did Raven. You know, as long as we kept the story barreling forward. To get back to...
Yeah, because it's sort of a complicated story,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it is. And to get back to your original question, so we went on the road for a few months with the show, got it fine-tuned, got everything figured out. And I have to say that I believe Bob Waldman is one of the great unsung writers of musical scores. I believe it is a beautiful score.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And not some of it unbelievably beautiful, like Deeper in the Woods.
Well,
and a lot of it just dirty as hell.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
I will always remember when we were working on the show and we were having music rehearsal for Love Stolen.
Yeah.
And I stopped in the middle of it and I said, "Do you realize what Jamie is telling us? He only likes sex if it's non-consensual."
Yeah.
I mean, that really kind of knocked us over. Like, okay, that's what this show is.
Yeah.
It's an adult show.
It is an adult show. It is very funny, but it's yeah. Also, it's got a little edge to it, which yeah. Alfred Urey just wrote a great book for it, and... for those who might not know, Alfred Urey went on to write Driving Miss Daisy.
And so, Last Night of Ballyhoo, all kinds of great
Ballyhoo,
stuff. Yeah.
And when we got to New York, because the company always had a season in New York or L.A. or, you know, we did the shows, and some of them got sort of, the reviews were kind of like, oh, aren't these kids cute doing this Chekhov piece, you know, or like, wow, Ellis Rabb, who directed Edward II, you know, they said, okay, that's bold, that's cool.
Now, were you doing this in rep?
Yes, in rep.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Robert Bridegroom, and everybody went, whoa, what is this? And it was tremendously well received. And,
that's cool. And, I always wondered, because yeah. It had never run very long anywhere.
No.
But.
Well, it was tremendously well received. I believe Patty ended up with a Tony nomination for Best
nice.
Supporting Actress for
right.
it. And and then off we went to Macomb, Illinois, or wherever
so,
we were
So the
going.
Stay in New York was designed as a limited run,
It was
right?
a designed, I think we were there 4 weeks. We did a week of each of the four shows. We had others, but these were the four they picked, and Robert Bridegroom was the sort of, well, let's see what happens with this. Well, what happened was investors just said, no, this could be a a real Broadway musical. So
I'm surprised that they were okay with the content, because the content is really edgy.
It's edgy, and it's a little nudge nudge wink wink in some of the sexual stuff, but it's also legitimately funny, and again, yeah, it had
really funny.
It had this great score.
Yeah.
So we went back on the road with it, and were basically informed that we were going to be on the road with the acting company doing their season, and our attachment to a future New York production was not happening. So, and that's when they decided, they went back to the St. Clements, the original cast that had done the workshop in St. Clements, and brought them into the Broadway show, but said, well, if we're going to have these people who aren't really names, we got to have a name. And that's when they got Barry Bostwick to play the Jamie,
who had really recently done Grease.
Then proceeded at one some point to break his arm, I guess.
Oh, I read about that. Swinging, and kept doing the show.
Yeah, swinging across on a rope or something. He fell and broke his arm, but they put a cast on him. An Appalachian cast, I guess. But, then that was it. And
so there were two companies of the same show.
Yes.
And those of you who originated it did not get to do the real Broadway run.
No, we didn't get to do the...
Although, it didn't run very long, right? A few months.
I don't know why either, because I did see it. And
because you would think once we had been through Hair and Grease, this would not be too shocking.
No, maybe they just didn't think it was very sophisticated, but I think it's an incredibly sophisticated show.
Oh, my God, yes.
And Bob's music is not as easy to learn as one might think.
No, it's all tricky.
It's very sophisticated, and during the course of the run, when we were on tour, a lot of the members of the acting company who had been out of the first graduating class of Juilliard, they decided that it was time for them to go. And even though I was playing big harp, I inherited Deeper Into the Woods to have to sing. And
which is not an easy song to sing.
No, while at that time, my singing voice was much better than it is now.
Some of that song's falsetto, right?
Yeah, comes a boy. I had to go way high up.
And truly one of the most subtly dirty lyrics.
Yeah. So Norman Snow, who had originated singing that song, and he had a beautiful singing voice, and he sang it very, very beautifully. But Bob Waldman did not want that. Bob Waldman wanted it, comes a boy, he gets so dead, he wanted it much...
Which would be more authentic,
much
right?
Much more nasal. Well, Patty didn't care for that.
Oh.
And, and...
I can see that working, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and so I'm like, well, now, who do I honor here? Bob or Patty?
The writer or the diva?
Yeah. And she, and I adore Patty. So she was great, I think I told you a story. I'll tell you this very quickly, that when we were in tech rehearsal in Saratoga, Patty, who was stark naked on stage,
right,
except for that blonde hair covering her breasts, and she was a trooper. Even 40 years ago, she was just great. And during tech, Gerald Friedman had allowed a large group of older women.
Just civilians
who wish to watch, who were on an outing and wish to watch the process and watch a tech rehearsal, which we all thought could not be more tedious or dreary to watch. But Pat, we were rehearsing a song. It may be Nothing Up, or I can't remember which song it was. Oh no, Jamie has stolen her clothes and she's walking through the woods, stark naked, and we had to stop to fix some lighting. Then Jerry wanted to go back and start something with music. And we had live musicians throughout the entire course of our run. We took four musicians who only played fiddle and bass and guitar.
Yeah, part of what's great about the show, there's no piano.
Right.
It really is just a bluegrass band.
Right, right.
Which is such a great sound. It's such a weird sound for a musical.
And there's no percussion except for the things that we provide on stage.
Right, right, that's true. No drummer, yeah. I forgot about that.
So Patty was getting more and more frustrated because she was standing there stark naked.
Although, that's what you do at tech, right?
That's
you stand
what you
around.
Do at tech, you know, and of course everybody was, you know, the group knew each other and nobody was, you know, being creepy or anything, but you were conscious that you were standing next to a completely naked woman. And Patty was like, why are we doing this? When can we stop doing this? And Gerald said, just hold on, Patty, hold on. And so we'd go back and we'd run it again. And we were confused as to why we were running certain things. And what Jerry was doing was getting Patty used to being naked in front of an audience.
Right, right.
And I don't think he needed to, because I don't think she cared. I think she just thought for some reason we were wasting time. But that's what, you know. And the show was, by far, that season was by far the biggest seller on our tour. We booked it everywhere, every college, every...
And received real well on tour?
Very well received.
That's terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really an unusual piece of theater.
It is.
I mean, I think it asks a lot of the audience.
It does, because it asks you to step, you know, we're not going to tell you who we are. You just have to step into our world.
Right.
Watch the show from our perspective. And once you get into sort of the fun of these people telling the story, like Salome, who doesn't love her, you know?
Right.
Goodbye Salome was a huge production.
It's a
number.
Hilarious song.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like that whole townspeople thing, that's part of why people embraced this thing, that there was a connection there because of that thing. Do you think that's true?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that it was part of the show. Who these people were telling the story was kind of what you first watch when you first are introduced to the show was people very slowly coming on stage and sitting down and somebody coming rushing on and a couple people pat them on the back because this is their first time doing a certain part. And, you know, the,
nice.
The band would come on and start tuning up and it's kind of like, what's happening here? And then all of a sudden we start singing and getting into the show, and they realize this is a very specific place and a very specific mentality that is telling this story. And I think people could relate to the fact that we all have family history. You know, everything about our lives is telling stories. We have theater stories. We tell them over and over again.
Yes.
You know, the ones we like, you know, and even the ones we don't like, they become important. And then you get a group of people who were involved with that, and you say, okay, so wait till you hear this. This is what happened. And then you recreate this disaster that happened on stage. And you realize that what you're watching is a bond.
Well, and that opening number is such an extraordinary opening. It does so much work.
Yeah.
It introduces everything we need.
Yeah.
But it also is such a great way to say to the audience, come on, come along.
It's just like,
we're going to tell a story. Want to listen to a story?
Absolutely. Listen to a story, and it's okay if you tap your foot.
Right,
it's
right.
It's all right, you know, and they're listening to this kind of, sort of Broadway authentic Appalachian kind of music, and you're hearing it live on stage. And back then, you rarely, if ever, saw a live band on stage who were also actually characters in the play, who occasionally made comments, you know, and if something, you know, when I can't remember his name, he's a folklore guy who's in the show, and he has a song. I can't remember his name, but you know, they were scared of him. The band would move to the other side of the stage to play music because they didn't like him so much, you know. And you didn't know if they liked the character or whether they liked the guy playing the character. But it was really fun. Just as a very, very small sidebar, because the show was extremely successful for the acting company and they got just bookings everywhere, we did not carry over to the next season that show, because already the Broadway show was happening, and there may, I don't know what the ins and outs of who had the rights to what,
right.
But Alfred and Bob wrote a new musical for us, which you might eventually look into if you can find it anywhere.
Yeah,
it was called Chapeau. And it was based on Goldoni's Italian farce, The Italian Straw Hat. And Orson Welles, because Hausman had produced it for Orson Welles' Mercury Theater, Orson Welles had adapted it and retitled it Horse Eats Hat. And that was, that's basically what The Italian Straw Hat's about. A horse hat accidentally eats this guy's hat, and he's trying to get recompense for it, and their mistaken identities, and all these people. Again, it didn't have the magic of Robert Bridegroom, but Bob's score is fantastic. And Alfred's book, while funny, the audience did not take to it. They didn't take to it at all. And I don't, you know, and it might have, and Jerry Friedman was directing it, and it might have been a little silly, but it wasn't a farce.
Right.
And then when we came into New York that season to do the shows, we did not bring that in. And, you know, which is too bad because I had a great part. But, but you know, what are you gonna do, you know? I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know what makes magic.
Right.
And what doesn't make magic. Because we thought when we started, this is really fun. And they didn't take to it.
Well, and you would think, if you describe Robert Bridegroom,
right,
you would not think that was a good idea for a musical.
Right. So, you know, but it really worked, and everybody, I don't think we got tired of doing it either. Not everybody had a great part in it, but everybody was a character, so you did have to be that person, you know.
Yeah.
And it really was a delightful thing to do, and the audiences loved it.
Well, it will always be one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
I just love it so much. Every element of it is so wonderful. And seriously, talking to you back then before we did it was so helpful to get all this information that we're talking about now. It was so helpful to me, and when I told the actors, they just were delighted by all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That was really cool. So thank you for that.
Well, my pleasure.
Thank you for talking to me today.
I'm delighted to do so. Good to see you.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. This is Scott Miller. Now you, too, have achieved stage grok. See you next time.